From PRI, Public Radio International, it's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. To every season, turn. There's a time for reaping and a time to sow. This hour we'll take time for an often overlooked season, the growing season. We're not going to plant anything. We're not going to harvest. We're just going to watch things grow. This hour we're discussing the growing season, our gardens, our lawns, our children. But can art grow? Enter Alba, the GFP bunny. Now let me lay it right on the line here. Alba is a rabbit who was genetically engineered to glow in the dark. Yes, a real, living, and breathing rabbit created in a lab to glow in the dark as a piece of art. Or as her creator, Eduardo Katz, puts it, a piece of transgenic art. Now you're not alone if you find this unsettling. Anne Strainchamp certainly did. She sat down with the artist, Eduardo Katz, to find out why he wanted to create a glow-in-the-dark bunny rabbit.
Because Alba, the invention of a new being, has no precedent in contemporary or modern art, it becomes very difficult to situate. In other words, you look at Picasso's contribution, fragmenting the human form, distorting the figure. You look at Marcel Duchamp's contribution of creating the ready-made or the appropriation, recontextualization of an existing object. You look at Dali's contribution, melting clocks and burning giraffes and creating completely imagined representations. When you're talking about an artist creating a living being, none of these hallmarks of modern or contemporary art serve to understand. In other words, while so far artists have created objects, what's really unique about this is that for the first time, perhaps, the artist is creating a subject.
Yeah, I mean, you're creating not just an object of some kind, but you've created a living being that has self-awareness, self-consciousness.
Exactly.
Have people gotten angry at you and said, you know, you're playing God, you're tinkering with actual life, that's immoral?
Yes, that has been part of it as well.
How do you respond?
That I'm playing God? Well, first, I don't think that she would agree.
Why not?
It's just a hunch. Besides, God used to be a personality cult. Now it's a 9-to-5 job.
What did you think would happen to Alba after she was born? I mean, did you think she'd live in a cage in a museum or she'd be bought by a private art collector? I mean, I'm curious about what the relationship of the artist is to his creation when his creation is alive.
Let me briefly recap how the project evolved because it will make more sense that way. Essentially, I had an agreement with the scientist that worked on the project that she would go to Avignon because I was going to have an exhibit there. I was going to live with her for about a week in a recreation of my living room, and the public would be able to come into contact with us. That was a very important element because rather than Alba being on display alone, the public would come in, they would see us together, they would see a relationship already in place, and then they would join us. They would be part of that relationship.
So you wouldn't just put Alba in a museum, you'd put yourself in one too?
Together with her, yes. But very importantly, not only the public would find that relationship already in place, they would be able to enter the space where we are and participate. And of course, that doesn't mean that they would necessarily be able to touch her. It would be up to her. If the person approaches gently and in a manner that she would feel comfortable, then of course she might come closer, but this you cannot predict. But anyway, the point being was that there was an agreement that she was going to come to Avignon, we were going to live together for a week, the public would be able to join us, and then she would come home to me, to live with me in Chicago. And what happened was that at the last minute, the director censored the work, the director of the laboratory, censored the work and did not allow her to leave the lab. She has never left the lab.
Does that make you sad?
Yes.
What have you done about it?
I started immediately to respond. First, I consulted with my curator, and we tried a more diplomatic approach. We contacted some people that we thought could persuade the director to see that there was no problem in releasing her to me. And we persisted on that for a while. And once it became clear that that route wasn't going to bear any fruit, then we went public. First with a letter to everyone that we could possibly reach. We emailed that letter to everyone in Europe. It was originally in French only. And then I went back to Paris and I started a public campaign. I gave lectures at the Sorbonne and many other places. I had interviews, radio, television. I had a public debate on live TV in France with a priest and a scientist. I placed posters all over the city of Paris, posters of a particular kind that I created that showed Alba and I.
So this was kind of a Free Alba campaign?
Exactly. That's exactly the Free Alba campaign.
But it didn't work.
I have not succeeded in obtaining her release, no.
Well, in the meantime, it's been a while since you created Alba, and you've proposed some other GFP, living being, transgenic forms of art also, and also consumerism has kind of moved in. For instance, there's a company out there that's now creating glow-in-the-dark zebrafish that you can buy at pet stores for your home aquarium. Does that bother you? I mean, would you see that as just the next logical step?
Well, in order to really understand what that was, I went ahead and bought five of those fish.
Do you like them?
They're not really, as I expected to be the case, they're not fundamentally different from other fish. And this was, in a way, part of the point that I wanted to bring about with Alba. Even though one may be afraid of her initially, when she looks you in the eye, you are forced to realize the fact that you are looking at another living being, and an element of empathy flourishes. It comes to the surface and immediately imposes itself. And with that, an element of responsibility, particularly in the case of a being that you either create or that you decide to bring into your home.
Yeah, but just play it out. For instance, you've referred to Picasso. Every new artist who comes along and creates a brand new form of art has imitators. And very often they've created, in fact, an entire new school of art. So suddenly there's cubism and there are many, many different cubist artists. So what happens if you've created a brand new kind of art and suddenly there are many, many transgenic artists, except in this case, they're all creating living creatures, living beings? I mean, shouldn't there be more than just you saying, well, this is how I did it, and it'd be nice if you all did it this way? Shouldn't there be some ethical code of conduct, some laws, some regulations?
Well, art is about freedom. You cannot ultimately regulate art. But at the same time, I agree that there are certain limits. For example, nobody could shoot another person against their will and say, well, I killed this person and that was an artwork. At that point, I think that is completely unacceptable. However, if I as an artist say, I would like you to shoot me, and if you agree, that is going to be a performance. For example, what Chris Burden did in the late 60s, which was exactly what I described, that is different. So a blanket code of conduct, I find it unacceptable. I think we have to look case by case.
As an artist, does it interest you at all to play with evolution, to have the creations that you've come up with enter into the flow of natural selection? I mean, would you have Alba or anything else you've created breed and go on and be part of the tree of life?
Yes. You are essentially creating mutation, variation, which are generally considered Darwinian evolutionary factors. But at the same time, I think we have to reconsider some of the parameters put forth by Mr. Darwin. I think today, evolution is primarily dictated by Wall Street and FedEx. Wall Street decides what lives and FedEx delivers. Mutation, survival of the fittest, these are old categories.
So the issues we're talking about keeps reminding me of one of your very first transgenic artworks, a project called Genesis. I wonder if you could describe that to me.
With Genesis, I started with a sentence from the book of Genesis, from the Bible. I don't own a Bible, so I went online and I copy and pasted a piece from King James Version into Microsoft Word. And that alone, I guess, would suffice for an artwork. You take King James, put that into Bill Gates, and that's probably enough. But I, not satisfied, I persevered and translated that to Morse code. And that sentence that says, basically it's a sentence that in which God gives man total control over everything that lives, translated that to the four bases of the four DNA bases, the four bases of genetics. So in the end, that sentence, let man have dominion over the fish of the sea and so on and so forth, became CTGDGCAA, etc.
So you translated that sentence into DNA?
Correct. And then I emailed that sequence to a company for gene synthesis, and 2 weeks later I got a FedEx package with the actual DNA. And then I created the Genesis bacteria by introducing that synthetic DNA. And when I say synthetic, you understand it, it's physical, it's tangible, just like this microphone, just like anything tangible in the world. And then I introduced that into a bacteria to create the Genesis bacteria and created an installation in which the bacteria sit on top of a UV light box, and the public through the internet, participants through the internet, can activate that UV box, and that's shortwave UV, so it causes mutations. In other words, somebody from Tokyo could click and activate the UV box in the gallery, cause mutation in the bacteria, and change the word of God in the body of the bacteria, say, in Zimbabwe.
So you humans, your art viewers, have become God. They're the ones controlling evolution.
Well, it is in a way a dilemma that I present to the participant, because of course the participant may choose not to participate. You may decide that you don't want to change the word of God. You don't want to change the genetics of these living organisms. You are against altering DNA, and you don't want to do this. In the context of the work, if you don't do it, then you contribute to the preservation of that statement, let man have dominion over the fish of the sea, and so on and so forth. In other words, you contribute to the preservation of the statement that God allows man to control more than allows, commands man to control everything that lives. On the other hand, you might say, well, I'm against this. I disagree with the sentence. I think we need to destroy the statement. The only way you can accomplish this in the context of the work is by altering the DNA of the bacteria. So whichever path you take, your actions are always implicated in the work, which is another way of showing that is true also beyond the work. Whatever we do, our actions or inactions have consequence.
Artist Eduardo Katz is the author of Telepresence and Bio-Art, Networking Humans, Rabbits, and Robots. And Strange Champ spoke with him. For photos of Alba, the GFP bunny, please go to our website at ttbook.org. By the way, the GFP stands for Green Fluorescent Protein, but you can just call her Alba. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. You can buy a copy of this program by calling the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. Ask for The Growing Season, program number 79A. To the Best of Our Knowledge is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour was produced by Charles Monroe Kane, with the help of Veronica Rickert, Doug Gordon, Anne Strange Champs, and Mary Lou Finnegan. Our executive producer is Steve Paulson. Our technical director is Kirill Owen.